I don't know if I would have written at 17 without Society's Child. I probably would never have gone away for 3 years to figure out whether I was a writer or not.
Ain't no place for a face to hide from God and the FBI.
I'm 50 years old. I've been doing it 38 years. Most artists can't say that.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. West Australia moves closer to sweeping rights reform, Spain's parliament moves to clear Franco's gay victims, and at 17, albums and the Big 5-0, a words in music chat with the legendary Janis Ian. All that and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm John Beaupre.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending December 15th, 2001. The state of West Australia's lower house, the Legislative Assembly, this week passed the state government's omnibus bill for equal rights for gays and lesbians. The Acts Amendment, Lesbian and Gay Law Reform Bill, represents sweeping reforms for both individuals and same-gender couples. Currently, West Australia is seen as lagging behind all other Australian states in its discriminatory treatment of gays and lesbians. In a marathon session, the opposition Liberal Party debated vigorously against the bill, particularly its provisions for adoption, fertility treatment, and equal age of consent, which Liberals equated with pedophilia. The Australian Family Association also vigorously opposed the bill, including placing print advertisements on the pedophilia theme, which the Advertising Standards Board found to vilify gays. Both groups intend to use reform against the ruling Australian Labor Party in the next election. The bill also had its first reading this week in West Australia's upper house, the Legislative Council. The opposition there forced a division in the initial vote, an unusual move at this early stage in the bill's progress. Although the state government had hoped to enact the bill before the end of the year, the council will not complete its work on the bill until February, when it will reconvene after the traditional summer recess. The controversial legislation appears to be taking a toll on West Australia's gay and lesbian youth, with a Perth area counselling centre reporting a fourfold increase in requests for services over the last 2 months.
ASIC, the Australian Securities and Investments Commission, this week settled its civil action against Greg Fisher, former head of the Satellite Group, which had been the world's first gay-identified company to go public. Satellite stock sank steadily after its September 1999 issue until trading was finally suspended in July 2000. The corporation was dissolved amidst allegations of misfeasance by Fisher and former board member Jonathan Broster. ASIC settled its lawsuit against Broster earlier this year. The terms of ASIC's settlement with Fisher were not made public. He will still face 3 criminal charges in the coming year.
Spain's parliament this week vowed to expunge the criminal records of gays arrested under the regime of General Francisco Franco and established a committee to begin to consider compensation for them. There are no clear records of how many gay men were incarcerated and tortured in prisons, camps, and mental institutions during Franco's 40-year dictatorship, but at least 1,000 were jailed in just the last 10 years before his death in 1975. While many other political detainees were pardoned in 1976, gay men continued to be convicted under a law on social dangers and rehabilitation through 1979, and the convictions have remained on the record until now. Spain's Federation of Gays and Lesbians President Pedro Zarolo said his group was pleased by the parliamentary action, but added, "What we want is a declaration of moral rehabilitation for those people who had a part of their lives stolen by the state."
Britain's government this week took a first step towards banning employment discrimination based on sexual orientation, publishing a proposal for public consultation. Current UK law prohibits only discrimination based on race, disability, and sex. And while the sex provisions have protected transsexuals, the courts have refused to apply them to gays and lesbians. The proposed legislation would make age and religion protected categories as well as sexual orientation, bringing UK law more into line with European Union directives. The process will be a lengthy one, with the public consultation alone continuing through March 2002. The Gay and Lesbian Humanist Association has already taken issue with a proposed exemption for all employment by religious groups, which would allow them to refuse to hire gays and lesbians and to require those they may already employ to remain celibate.
A Swedish administrative court has made the unusual decision that a sperm donor who fathered three children for a lesbian couple must pay child support now that the women have split up. Until now, sperm donors have not been recognized as legal fathers in Sweden, but in this case, there was no question of the man's biological parenthood, and he had maintained regular contact with the family as well. Sweden's Sexual Equality League has opposed the county ruling in the town of Orbro on the grounds that it would deter gay men from donating sperm. The donor has appealed the decision to a district court.
Tiny Liechtenstein is the latest European country to move towards legal recognition of same-gender couples. Its parliament has approved a bill to extend to gay and lesbian couples the same status as legally married couples in areas including taxation and insurance. A further proposal for equal adoption rights and equal access to fertility treatment failed. The partnership measure must still be ratified by the government.
In the U.S., Atlanta, Georgia's exiting mayor, Bill Campbell, this week vetoed a bill to require the city's contractors to extend the same health care benefits to their unmarried workers' domestic partners that they offer married workers' spouses. Although Campbell has been a gay supportive mayor and calls himself a strong supporter of domestic partnership benefits, his spokesperson said the bill was too uncompromising. Even its sponsor, City Councilmember Michael Bond, had admitted that there were problems with it, as the bill he pushed through at the end of the council's legislative session included none of the waivers he'd planned and would have served to disqualify most city contractors in January.
But some gay and lesbian employees of the state of Minnesota will gain domestic partner health benefits for the first time, although they may not last long. After the state legislature's Subcommittee on Employee Relations deadlocked in a 5-5 tie this week, state contracts will become effective December 21st with two unions representing a total of some 30,000 employees, the Minnesota Association of Professional Employees and the state branch of the AFSCME, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. The contracts could still be revoked in the new year when the Minnesota legislature reconvenes. Some Republican state lawmakers are strongly opposed on both moral and financial grounds.
And finally, the latest species to be added to the very long list of animals in which homosexual behavior has been observed is the orangutan, the only great ape native to Asia. In the American Journal of Primatology, Dr. Elizabeth Fox of the New York-based Wildlife Conservation Society reported seeing two male pairs in the jungles of Sumatra. She noted that orangutans are an endangered species which is fast disappearing. That's not due to homosexuality, but to their capture for pets and the loss of their jungle habitat. She wrote that this demonstrated that homosexual behavior is not an artifact of captivity or contact with humans, and served to add orangutans to the list of primates in which homosexual behavior forms part of the natural repertoire of sexual or sociosexual behavior.
That's News Wrap for the week ending December 15th, 2001. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm John Beaupre.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
Has society's child learned the truth at 50? Find out in our exclusive interview with singer-songwriter Janice Ian after this report from high in the Rocky Mountains. Aspen, Colorado celebrates its 25th anniversary Gay and Lesbian Ski Week in late January. Along with the obvious opportunity to spend time with friends and family at one of the world's prime ski and snowboarding locales, there are parties, a film festival, and lots of other events planned. This Way Out correspondent Neil David Seibel has more.
Most of our community is pretty familiar with the big charity events that happen and show up on our calendars each year, but what we probably are not so familiar with is how these events take place. I'm here with Jim Tomberlin of Aspen Gay Ski Week, and hopefully he's going to shed some light on this subject. Jim, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Aspen Gay Ski Week's been around for a while. You've been around for about 25 years. Started as a small sort of grassroots happening and grew into a big event. How did that come about?
Yeah, well, it sort of essentially began on the street corners of Aspen about some 25 years ago, just all by accident. Had a group of our local guys was walking on the street. They saw this other group of gay guys visiting from California. And from there, they skied for a whole week, had a great time, and then it started repeating itself year after year. And then from there, it just grew by word of mouth.
So what does it take to get a big event like this going nowadays?
It takes a lot not a lot of work. We started on organizing this particular week, which there happens to be our 25th anniversary this year, probably about 6-7 months ago. We have a very active board of directors. We have a lot of very dedicated volunteers. So we sort of set a vision, get everyone involved, and voila, the event comes together.
Who starts it all?
Well, this sort of begins with our board of directors.
And from there, the actual event takes place. It's all volunteer?
It's all volunteer. We actually have 2 paid staff people, one full-time, one part-time. And then from there, we just start recruiting.
What actually goes on during the week?
Well, there's on-mountain activities and off-mountain activities, depending on what your inclination may be, whether you ski or snowboard. And actually, Aspen's one of the most famous resorts in the whole world. We have 4 ski mountains, some of the best, what we would term champagne powder that can be found anywhere. So if you're a skier, you truly would appreciate this.
And what about non-skiers?
Non-skiers? Well, that's a good point. Even if you don't ski, there's so much to do here. We have the obvious dance parties. We have fundraisers, or the whole event's a fundraising event.
So this is all for charity?
It's all for charity.
Okay.
In fact, we bill it as even as the world's premier party for charity. And we have a draw from all around the world.
So I know you call yourself a 100% charity. What do you mean by that?
Well, we're a charity for charities. And you hear of so many events out there that say, well, we give to charity, and they give, you know, essentially like 10%. But in reality, as far as our event's concerned, after the event's over and we close out the books, we actually disperse 100% of our funds to selected charities.
So when you're done with the event, what then?
What then? Well, then we just take a little break, and then we get ready for next year.
It's a great event. Thanks for joining us today, Jim. Aspen Gay and Lesbian Ski Week runs January 20th through the 27th. For more information, visit their website at www.gayskiweek.com. From KAJX Studios in Aspen, Colorado, I'm Neil David Seibel, and you're listening to This Way Out.
Janice Ian is well known as a musical performer and writer, beginning her career in the 1960s with the controversial hit Society's Child and continuing to top the charts through the 70s with At 17 and Jessie. But there's far more to this Grammy-winning musician, as This Way Out's Chris Wilson learned when she recently sat down with Janice Ian to talk about everything from outing to controversial U.S. radio shock jock Howard Stern.
I learned the truth at 17, that love was meant for beauty queens. In high school, girls with clear skin smiles who married young and then retired.
17 has become a milestone of a different kind for singer-songwriter Janice Ian, who with her 17th album on a major label is still going strong at age 50. This is Chris Wilson, and I had the privilege of interviewing Janice Ian on her recent tour following the release of her latest CD, God and the FBI. Janice Ian is not only prolific, but a remarkably intuitive songwriter, whose work continues to be fresh and intelligent even after 4 decades of writing and performing.
How do you keep doing it?
I have no idea. I think there's a certain amount of just sheer stubbornness to it. I think that when I decided to start recording again 12 years ago, I looked around at the people I grew up with in the 60s and 70s, and a lot of them were making records that I thought were nowhere near the good work they'd done back then, and I didn't want to be like that. So I looked at what other people were listening to and tried to figure out what it was I had that they didn't have and what I would have to do to make myself interested in listening to me now. And I think it's also that I got wiped out and pretty beat up in the 80s and the 90s. And I really did literally have to start over physically and financially and with my writing and establish some new credibility. So all that conspired.
Do you play like a girl?
You know, I play the best I can, and I don't think that it's that good, but an awful lot of other people do. So, it's funny, it's interesting, because when I was a kid, playing like a girl was about one of the rudest things you could say to a musician. You run like a girl, you play like a girl, you throw like a girl. And nowadays, the only answer to it is, well, duh, I'm female.
Janice Ian first burst on the music scene in 1967 with the release of Society's Child, which she wrote when she was just 15. The song was as controversial as it was popular, because it dealt head-on with the subject of interracial relationships at a time when the civil rights movement was still in its infancy. Think that you would be as well known without the controversy of Society's Child?
Oh, I have no idea. I mean, it's impossible to answer because I don't know if I would have written at 17 without Society's Child. I probably would never have gone away for 3 years to figure out whether I was a writer or not. You know, if I hadn't started that young, I wouldn't have had that luxury. But it's impossible to tell.
When did you actually first start writing? Because that was published when you were so young. Do you recall when you started writing music?
Oh, yeah. I wrote my first song when I was 12, and it was published when I was 12 and a half.
What, at that point, did you want to be when you grew up? Did you know it was going to be a songwriter?
Oh, at that point, I wanted to be famous. I thought that the coolest thing in the world would be to be famous and walk down the street and have people running after you all the time.
How have things turned out in relation to the way you thought they would turn out?
Well, I think when I became famous, when I was 15 and 16, I discovered that really underneath that goal, that wasn't my real objective. You know, I always think that your talent leads you, and a lot of the time you just end up following it, not really understanding why. When I hit 16, 17, and I was already a has-been, I really wasn't sure if I was a songwriter, if I had the right to call myself a songwriter like Johnny Mercer did, or Bob Dylan. And I stopped performing for 3 years to figure that out. So, you know, I'm grateful for that time because it forced me to make the choices I made.
Mama's making Mimeo's Pete's on a stereo, singing about freedom, bugs in the bedroom, big investigation, danger to the nation. And seizure, better by a lawyer. We know you're a member, saw you undercover. Are you hiding evidence? None of this makes any sense. They call the FBI, had to disappear. Called the demon, G-men, see you at the semen. Told them I was hiding here. They could fingerprint my heart. I knew it from the start. For a face to hide from God and the FBI. Commies, pinkos, reds at the windows, foreign agitators, running elevators, J. Edgar Hoover in a pink tutu. Investigating anyone who thinks like you. To the 50s, you look a little shifty. They call the FBI, had to disappear.
This latest release, God and the FBI, captures Janice Ian's nonconformist and brilliantly opinionated spirit, which comes through not only in her music, but in her many essays and other writings.
In addition to songwriting and touring, you're a very prolific writer, and I've seen your work in The Advocate and Performing Songwriter, and you have some pretty strong opinions, so I'd like to ask you, that doesn't come as a surprise that I might think that, I'd like to ask you if you could share with me what some of those opinions are on some subjects, and the first one is outing.
Well, you know, the nice thing about writing articles is that you're not tied to a rhyme scheme or music, and when The Advocate hired me to write for them, They hired me, quote, as their resident iconoclast. That was the job description. So I looked for things that I could pretty much mouth off about. And I got a reputation for having a big mouth, and I think, you know, that's fine. Outing. Well, I was outed in 76. You know, I'm very anti-outing unless someone is actively concerned with holding back gay people's civil rights or fomenting hatred. And I'm against it because I don't think you have the right to determine somebody's future. I don't think anyone has that right. Most of the people who are very pro-outing live in what I would call the gay ghetto. They work in gay businesses. They are surrounded by gay people. They live in gay-friendly areas. And that's well and good for them. Most of the gay people that I know live in places where their children can be taken away or they can lose their jobs. And yes, it's very unfair, and yes, we need more people to stand up. But I think until all the gospel singers stand up and until all the movie actors stand up and the politicians stand up, we shouldn't expect every day jobber in the world to do it for us. So I'm really anti it. I think it's an amazing amount of hubris on someone's part.
How about political correctness?
Oh, political correctness is just tedious, isn't it? It's boring. I mean, it's the same as in the 60s, if you didn't wear a work shirt and have long hair, you were a geek. And in the 70s, if you didn't think that I was cool and you listened to disco instead, you were a geek. In the 80s, if you weren't making money, you were a geek. And what is politically correct nowadays? It's just a convenient way to draw some more lines.
You had some interesting things to say about Howard Stern in one of your recent articles. And maybe some of our listeners haven't read as many of your writings as I have. So maybe you could give us a quick take on Howard Stern.
Well, it was interesting to me how much flack I got for going on Howard's show. And I'd say 90% of it was from people who never saw the show. I mean, I watched Linda Ronstadt get up on, I think it was The Tonight Show, and just lambaste Howard, and she'd never even heard the show. You know, to me, when I go on Howard's show, I reach an audience I would never reach on my own. I reach a bunch of 12 to 20-year-old rednecks, guys mostly, whose idea of a gay woman is somebody who hasn't slept with the right guy. And I like Howard. I like him because he gives as good as he gets, and if you can give back, then he loves you. He gives good radio. I mean, when he said to me that I was gay because I just hadn't slept with the right man, and I said, well, you're straight because you haven't slept with the right man, and he roared, I thought, I like this guy. And you know what? Howard Stern always remembers my partner's name. Howard Stern always asks how she is. He's the only radio personality I can think of who takes the time to remember that.
This is Chris Wilson, and I'm speaking with Janice Ian, who is not only a singer-songwriter and essayist, but who also has a very visible presence on the internet.
I've been to your website, which is www.janiceian.com.
In all humility.
Yes, but there's a lot of information on there. And what really struck me, too, is the bulletin board and your constant participation and communication with your fans, despite all else that you do with touring and writing. Mm. And not a lot of artists do that. Why is that so important to you?
I made a decision when I came back to being an artist that I wasn't going to be the kind of artist who lived an insular life. I write about people. I write about people's hearts and people's thoughts and their lives. And I have what my partner calls a morbid fear of losing touch with the street. Because I think as an artist, it's too easy to live in this tiny little bubble surrounded by people who keep their jobs by protecting you from everything else. I work with a lot of artists like that. So I made that choice, and I started looking for ways, as I got busier, as I got more well-known again, to make sure I didn't lose touch, not just with the fans, but with the casual stranger. And I think as a result of that, I'm very friendly towards strangers. You know, I'll walk up to somebody and start talking. When I hit a new city and I have a day off, I like to walk around and just meet people and get the feel for it. The bulletin board and the website became just a really easy way to do that. You know, email is amazing because I can stay connected with my friends and my fans. I suppose it's also I was living in Nashville, and in Nashville, fans come first, you know, and that's a good lesson for someone like me because I can still play concerts and I can still play clubs on my own, and sometimes it's full and sometimes it's a quarter house, but I still have a presence. I'm 50 years old. I've been doing it 38 years. Most artists can't say that. I think a lot of the reason for that is because audiences sense it. You know, they know whether you like them. And they know that after my shows, I stay and I meet people. And they know that if they email me on my website, it will get answered. And they know that if they post on the bulletin board, it's a safe place to have a discussion. I mean, that's what we dreamed for it. You know, we dreamed that the website could be a small community. And it wouldn't just be people who wanted Janice Ian stuff. It could also be the gay kid who wrote in last month and said he was 14 and wanted to come out to his parents. And would everybody kind of sit by the website that night so that if he needed help, they could talk to him? You know, or some woman whose husband is dying, or somebody who lost a child. It's become a support group as well. And that's great. To me, that's the best use of it.
On days like these, when the rain won't fall, and the sky is so dry that even birds can't call, I can feel your tears disappearing in the air. Carried on the breeze in days like these.
Do you consider your life and your career to have been a successful one?
It's interesting. Somebody posted that on my bulletin board a couple of weeks ago. Said that they couldn't understand why they didn't feel like a success because they'd attained all their goals. I don't know what success is anymore. You know, as cliched as that sounds, 20 years ago, even maybe 10 years ago, success would have been having another hit record. Right now, I feel real successful that I'm out of debt except for my mortgage and my car, and I managed to put my partner through law school, and I lead a life that's congruent with my work. I think that's successful. Beyond that, I don't know anymore.
For This Way Out, this is Chris Wilson.
But you can't reap what you don't sow, and you can't plant in hollow ground. So let us fill this empty earth with hope until the rains come down.
Thanks for tuning into This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, John Beaupre, Graham Underhill, Jason Lynn, Chris Ambidge, Brian Nunes, Rex Walkner, Neil David Seibel, and Chris Wilson and Christopher David Trentum contributed program material. Thanks also to Thomas Ironman and KAJX in Aspen, Colorado. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen to This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on Planet Out. Just point your browser to www.planetout.com and click first on Multimedia, then on Radio. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by direct charitable donations from our listeners around the world, which are currently being matched by a grant from the Gill Foundation. For an important message about how you can help This Way Out stay on the air, please visit our webpage at thiswayout.org, email us at tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on KOMY Monterey, California, Access Radio, Wellington, New Zealand, WPKN Bridgeport, Connecticut, and more than 125 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Do stay tuned.